Today on Main Calling, reassessing social media in your daily life. Some longtime Facebook users have decided to jump ship or find a new online community. Others have left X, formerly known as Twitter, in search of other options. What's behind this season of change? Some say they're making a political statement. Others say it's about reducing screen time or just recalibrating the role that social media plays in their lives. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on the program, we'll explore the shifting landscape and learn more about new platforms that may offer a fresh start for some users. And as always, we want to hear from you. Have you changed your social media habits? Thinking about it? We'll explore some of the alternative platforms and why they appeal to certain users seeking a different kind of online community. Main Calling is coming right up.
Main Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Maine Health, where care teams provide expert, coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self, mainehealth.org, and by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. There's a lot going on in the social media landscape out there right now, whether driven by politics or screen fatigue. A growing number of people are changing their social media habits or leaving altogether. We'll examine these shifts today and what they might mean. Joining me, Judith Rosenbaum, Chair and Associate Professor with the University of Maine's Department of Communication and Journalism, and Devin Ivey, senior software engineer who grew up in South Portland, is one of the creators of the social media platform or service, Blue Sky. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you fed up with social media or certain platforms? And are you worried about how it's affecting you or someone you know? Or maybe you're focused on ways that social media is useful to you and just entertaining. Share your comments and questions. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. And of course, you can use social media to post a comment for today's show. Or just give us a call. The number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Welcome both of you to Maine Calling. We'll start with Judith and kind of a view from above. The premise of the show, as I just stated, is that there are some major shifts or trends in the social media world. How would you sort of characterize or highlight the main headlines?
Sure. So when I was asked to be on the show, I actually thought back to my very first time on Maine Calling, which was in January 2018, to talk about a research study I did about what was then called Twitter. And I reflected on how much has changed since 2018. I mean, obviously, during COVID, social media was a saving grace for many people as we were in lockdown, and it was the only way we could communicate with folks. It was sometimes the only way we could buy things through places like Facebook Marketplace. And so social media became this really integrated aspect in our lives. And then as the pandemic faded to the background, we saw that the landscape that emerged was really different, right? Social media nowadays is really focused on short-form videos, think TikTok, but also Reels on Instagram and Facebook. We see an incredible increase in commercialization. Most of the students in my classes want to be an influencer today, or they avidly follow a bunch of influencers. And from my research perspective, Twitter used to be presented as this digital marketplace of ideas, right? This big potential for an online public sphere. And that has really changed as the social media landscape has fragmented and folks have left for platforms like Blue Sky, like Reddit, like Threads. And so what we're seeing is that social media is no longer this big community. Not that it ever really was, but now we are for sure that it's really not so much a uniting factor as that it provides folks with various niches where they can find like-minded people and explore things that they like. So it's really a vastly changed landscape from, 7 years ago.
So some people are fleeing from this this amalgam of, rather than just what they set out to do, which was to communicate with people they wanted to reach, now stuff is being thrown at them to buy, or to, you know, videos they know nothing about being forced to watch. It's sort of this sort of fire hose of stuff they don't want is why they're trying to find alternative platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's why I know I used to be very active on what is now called X with fellow academics, and we all slowly migrated to either Mastodon or Blue Sky. And just because it's a more quiet, less commercialized space. And you see a lot of folks leaving Facebook for similar platforms. A lot of people have moved to WhatsApp, for instance, where they might create smaller groups just to drive down the noise of these big social media platforms. At the same time, young people are all drawn to TikTok, right? And when TikTok was temporarily banned, they flocked to spaces like RedNote, which are very similar in terms of being a short form video platform. So there's still that desire to passively consume social media content, you know, to watch the funny reels, to see the dog videos or watch the dances. I don't know if that's going to go away, but people have become very conscious about seeking out spaces that are more comfortable to them.
We'll talk more about TikTok a little bit later. And I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I was shocked by the reaction. It was genuine panic. The idea that TikTok would be no more, I think I underestimated how real that emotion was. But that's probably also part of the discussion about whether it should be controlled. But let's go to Devin Ivy. We're talking about Blue Sky a lot here in the early going as this alternative to Twitter. And Devin Ivy, you came into Blue Sky sort of just, or as Blue Sky was emerging just prior to Twitter's takeover by Elon Musk. When you got to Blue Sky, did you see the future at the time that it was unfolding, or were you just thinking, you know, we can build a better machine here?
First, thanks for having me. Yeah, that's a great question. So the time when I started at Blue Sky, it was really pretty incredible timing given everything that's happened since. I joined in October 2022, which is the same month that Elon's purchase of Twitter finalized. We're a response to, it's kind of yes and no. On one hand, no, we had no idea that social would take this particular turn. On the other hand, social media already had its discontents, and we already had this strong sense that innovation was being stifled in social media. So, you know, I think the writing was kind of on the wall, and it was kind of a response to, things like seeing, you know, Mark Zuckerberg hauled in front of Congress and berated over the effect on teenagers and stuff like that. So yes and no. I think we could never have guessed we'd end up on this particular timeline, though.
Yeah, and we'll hear more about that. But I do want to talk a bit about your story. So you're a native of South Portland, and you were, as a pretty young kid, interested in this sort of stuff, right? You were, I think, in middle school when we were laughing before the show came on, when MySpace was all the rage. And I bet there are people listening now who have no idea what MySpace is. But so tell us a little bit about what the arc of your career here from
South Portland. Sure thing. Yeah, I grew up in South Portland. I went to, you know, if anyone in South Portland, I went to Skillen Elementary School over there and then Memorial Middle School. And so, you know, I grew up in that neck of the woods. The arc of my career, well, quite early on, I was really into the web, really inspired by the web. I think I loved that you could just You didn't have to ask anyone. You could just go publish and build and share it with your friends. And it was just this kind of incredible feeling. So I was, taken by that early on. And I followed that thread consistently, from, I don't know, maybe when I was 10 or something like that from elementary school. And I kind of just became a web developer. I got into programming, started just by playing around and building cool web pages with fun facts about myself and my interests. And then eventually turned to building kind of more sophisticated stuff on the web. I got really into security in particular when I was in high school and running my own servers and stuff like that. And then in college, I didn't actually study computer science. I studied math and photography. But then coming out of college, I got a job in, I moved back to Portland from the Boston area, and I got a job at a place called Big Room Studios, which I think goes by Big Room Technologies now. And I worked there for about 10 years as a software engineer and a team lead over there. It's an awesome team. They do kind of services work. So startups and some big companies come to them and say, "Hey, I have this idea. I want to build this or that." And we help them flesh out their idea and then build it with them. So I worked there for 10 years and loved it. Along the way, I kind of got into this idea of decentralized social media or more democratic forms of social media, and had been following that as kind of a niche. And that's how I found Blue Sky and eventually applied.
So Blue Sky is growing. I read that it's adding that it was adding over 1 million users a day in the period immediately after the election. How is it going as of today?
It's going great. It's going really well. I think today we're going to hit another 1 million marker. I think we're going to hit 33 million today, which is cool. Not that 6 months ago, our numbers were, something like half that. You'd have to look back, roll the tape. So growth has been going really well, especially this year, and we're seeing more pickup in some more mainstream areas like sports and news and stuff like that. So that's been great.
So you must have a sense of what's driving that growth. I'm sure there's different reasons, but what would you say it is about Blue Sky that's appealing to people who have decided to leave X, formerly known as Twitter?
Yeah, I think that there really are a whole variety of factors. I mean, there's no doubt a lot of our growth is fueled by kind of discontents of Twitter and discontents of even Elon Musk in particular, but it's definitely not limited to that. Like Judith mentioned, it's a less commercialized space. We're building things in a way that we think are more user aligned. We're building out features so that people have more control over their experience, whether it's some novel features around kind of your feeds that you use and the algorithms that are available to you, which is very different. Or, we even have like some interesting, moderation features where you can choose other people than just Blue Sky to moderate your experience or help you label content there. Go ahead. Yeah.
I wanted to add on to what you were saying because I do definitely see that in other spaces also, that folks have become really familiar with how algorithms drive what content you see. And we see a lot of frustration with that on Twitter, but also in spaces like Facebook. Spaces like Blue Sky and similar platforms give a lot of control back to the user. And that understanding of personal agency, right? I control what I see. I think especially at this point in the world is really important to people. And I think Blue Sky has been able to tap into that.
Thanks for saying that. Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. We've definitely been trying to. And the last thing I'll kind of add on that is there's really two sides to that. There's, me, the lurker scroller, just trying to find stuff I'm interested in. Then there's also the creators on the other side. And creators live and die by the algorithms on the platforms that they use. And so for us to, we can dig into a little more if you want, but to hand over some control over the algorithms and over the content people see to other parties, I think that gives a sense of agency or safety for creators too.
Well, I want to follow up also with this other notion of maybe the era of these centralized platforms run by billionaires might be less and less appealing. And there's this moment that sort of captures this with some irony at the recent South by Southwest. That's the big tech conference at which Blue Sky CEO Jay Graber wears a T-shirt that has on it, the T-shirt is basically poking fun at Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, but using Latin, which I love. Her shirt reads, "Apologies to my 8th grade Latin teacher here, Mundus sine Caesaribus," which translates to "a world without Caesars" in Latin. And it's a reference to a shirt that Zuckerberg wore at the Meta Connect that read, it was like, aut Zuck, aut nihil, which is Zuck or nothing, which is in reference to aux Caesar, aut nihil, Caesar or nothing. But the gist here, if you're not a Latin enthusiast, or I've butchered it so that you can't understand, she's poking fun at this idea of maybe we don't need a world with Caesars running these platforms and giving people sort of almost a populist movement here, but the populist in the sense of people having ownership and control. Judith, did you want to comment,
Yeah, I
please?
mean, we're really almost. So I think I'm a little older than Devin. When I started college, I was on a bulletin board system that was like a DOS run a group made up of a variety of chat rooms, and it was entirely run by students at universities. And I think we're really going back to the origins of those types of spaces where the users determine what you see and what is said. And there is some moderation, but it's not entirely top down. Top heavy the way that folks perceive some social media platforms to be today. And so I'm wondering if this is a move back to that, to my days in college.
Yeah, I mean, our concern here is that, a social media ecosystem run by a few mega corporations is just, they become bottlenecks for expression. They become bottlenecks for innovation within social media. They tend to box out competitors aggressively. And we just don't see a path forward. We don't think that's really the future. Social media is important enough that societies tend to reflect kind of their dominant forms of communication. So, we're a product of how information is shared and flows to us. And so if we want a democratic society, we need more democratic social infrastructure, which means more democratic ways of building social media.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we want to hear from you. The number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall, and we are taking stock of the role that social media plays in our lives. For some, it's an important way to stay connected to others, and for some, it's a pit of negative politics or maybe too much of a time sink. But are there new and better ways to use social media? We'll talk about that in this hour. My guests are Devin Ivey, a senior software engineer with the emergent social media platform Blue Sky. He's also a native of South Portland. And Judith Rosenbaum, she teaches media studies at the University of Maine, and part of her focus is on meaning making in social media. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you use social media for? Watching videos or getting your news or staying in touch with old friends? How do your kids use it? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, or of course, use social media to get in touch with us. You can post a comment on Maine Calling's Facebook or on Instagram. And let's bring in now my colleague, Lucy Santerre. She's the social media manager here at Maine Public. Hey, Lucy.
Hi there, Keith.
Hey, thanks for coming on. So you are, I guess you're the social media manager. You're always keeping an eye out on what people are responding to and how social media use is evolving. What patterns or trends are you seeing recently?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So one thing I've noticed, especially in the last, I'd say 3 to 5 years on social media, just as a user and now as someone who works kind of behind the scenes for a brand like Maine Public, is that there's a lot more commercial or brand presence on social media. So, you know, what used to be, you know, scrolling through Instagram where you would see photos of your friends and updates maybe from local businesses, you're seeing a lot more corporate or commercial content. And so running an account for Maine Public, we are aware of that and we keep up with best practices. But from a user standpoint and someone scrolling, you're going to see a lot more content from companies and organizations, whether that's news media organizations or retail companies. So the experience of scrolling in your feed will feel a lot more commercial, whether it's a paid ad or not. And then another trend we'll see is just more and more platforms to choose from. And, you know, that means that people have to decide where they want to spend their time. And there's platforms that are changing. And so, you know, you might like TikTok, but you like the direction that it's going. And, yeah, there's just lots more choices.
Yeah, so I think it's fair to say you represent a younger segment of the population as compared to me. What are you hearing from your peers? Are younger users getting, you know, burned out on certain platforms? Are they hungry for personal interactions? What are you seeing?
Yeah, I definitely hear from my friends, especially lately, especially in the last few months, that they're deciding to step away from social media platforms. I know a lot of people have left X/Twitter, and more so recently, I've been hearing a lot of people saying that they want to leave Instagram. That every time they go on Facebook, they just leave not feeling very great because, like I mentioned before, they're not really seeing content from their friends. They're either seeing content that's AI-generated, content from sort of like creators that are just churning up things to get more clicks. Though I will say that there are platforms like TikTok where I think, you know, some people, they make that decision to cut themselves off. But for me personally, TikTok feels a little different from the other platforms because my For You page is bringing me content that I like. And so for people who I know who use TikTok, I think that there's still a lot of delight that can be found on that platform if you're, you know, creating that For You page and that algorithm that serves you the things that you like. And then just one more thought too is, you know, a lot of people might be still spending time online, whether that's on social media or not. But when it comes to personal interactions, I think there are other things people are doing online too, such as like gaming or watching live streams of creators on places like YouTube or Twitch that might not necessarily be the same as social media like Instagram or TikTok, but it's taking up a lot of their online time. And I think it's part of a broader trend of people just not really hanging out in person maybe quite as much as they used to.
Yeah. So you know, obviously social media is part of your job here at Maine Public. What are the benefits of social media for an organization, you know, such as Maine Public or even in just people's personal lives? What's the positive side?
Yeah. So two parts to that. For someone's personal life, kind of like I mentioned, I think people can go online and they can go on social media for whatever reason they want. There's an infinite number of things you can do. So one example for me is if I just really want to, you know, kill 20 minutes, I could read a book, I could meditate, I could do something else. But sometimes I do just turn to TikTok because I want a laugh. I want to see someone creating a funny edit with an audio trend that just makes me chuckle, or I want to see, you know, some really cool feat, you know, someone skiing down a mountain, someone surfing, you know, those are the things that I like to see on my For You page. And it's just a little bit of entertainment to fill some time. Now, people may argue that's good or bad, but that's what I use it for. From a brand angle, I love this question because I think that we just all know that people are getting news on social media. And so it's just critically important to me that if people are getting news on social media, that they're getting it from trusted sources. So for every you know, established news media organization out there. There are 1,000 creators and accounts that are putting out information that may or may not be reliable. So it's really important to me that if someone is following Maine Public, they can know that we're going to be putting out the news about Maine and the communities that's valuable to them, and that it's coming from, you know, our own news team that you yourself are on, right, Keith? So if someone's following Maine Public, they know that they can trust what they're getting from us. And there's other public media stations and other reputable news sources where they might get breaking news. So if I knew that there was something happening, maybe I heard some chatter from some friends or I did see something on social media, if I refresh my Instagram feed, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to see a breaking news update from like BBC or the New York Times. And so I think a lot of people used to use Twitter for that. I think, like it's been mentioned in the show, Blue Sky might be starting to fill that space for other people. And so I'm just making sure that if someone is getting their news on social media, that we're going to be there as a trusted source, meeting people where they are.
Yeah. Lucy, thank you so much. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Keith. My pleasure.
Lucy Santerre is Maine Public's social media manager. Lucy got into a lot there, but any reaction, Judith, from what she had to say?
Yeah, I am very pleased that she's focusing on the news consumption aspect, because it's I mean, I might be old school, but I mean, the majority of news that young people consume come from social media influencers. So here we have people who have no journalism experience, no broadcasting experience, who are providing news to the younger generation. I mean, I am inclined to see this as problematic. At the same time, when I was a teenager, I certainly was not watching the evening news with my parents. So it's, on the one hand, it's a good thing that at least they're exposed to some news. On the other hand, it is concerning that they're getting, a lot of folks are getting news not from Maine Public or not from the BBC. I also appreciated that Lucy touched on the positive side, because sometimes that gets lost, right? People talk about social media hurts my mental health, I feel worse, but I do it too. When I'm in need of a pick-me-up, I'll play a couple reels with dogs or horses or someone, you know, a dolphin in the ocean or something. And it makes me smile, and I'll send it to a friend and we'll connect over this funny or cute reel. And I think that is, you know, that's something offered by social media that other media don't offer, and that we can't just cast that aside as meaningless, because, you know, you find joy where you can, and sometimes that's in a TikTok reel, right?
Right. Yeah. Devin?
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I'd like to add on the news angle, and actually it might be interesting to get more perspective here, but historically, social media has had a bit of a toxic relationship, I would say, with the news media. The way incentives are traditionally aligned with a platform like Facebook that supports ads is Facebook is trying to keep eyeballs on Facebook, and they tend to deprioritize content that will link out, for example, to a news website. And so this is one thing that we've seen an incredibly positive reaction to. We love links. We aren't monetized through advertisements, so we can happily surface great news media and link out to the news outlets. And the reactions we've gotten are just incredible. It seems like this is like a real issue news outlets are having. And other folks, like, you know, bloggers and just anything that, you know, anything that requires traffic from social media websites.
This issue of age, I guess we brought up by my mentioning that Lucy is a younger demographic. Does at Blue Sky, are you thinking about demographics? In other words, we're talking about the, you know, the American users as this, you know, homogenous group, but they're really different in terms of the way that they, you know, the way that they use social media. Do you at Blue Sky, for example, think very differently about each audience and the age groupings in terms of the service that you're crafting?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. Definitely. Yeah, we're paying attention to how different demographics are using social media and their different needs. So some examples here, the younger generations are really into video, it seems like. We just yesterday lengthened videos to 3 minutes from a minute. We have much better support for kind of the vertical videos that are common, kind of popularized by TikTok. But younger generations are also often retreating into more private spaces like direct messaging and stuff like that. So we're also investing in, you know, upping our game in we have a direct messaging functionality and upping our game there. So yeah, social media has, you know, different demographics have different needs, and we're trying to kind of like pay attention and speak to them.
And what's really interesting there too is that we see younger generations, and that, the reason they got so upset when TikTok went away is because it's a space where you can produce content without having these high quality expectations. Whereas spaces mm-hmm. like Instagram, even though it's incredibly visual, there's a tremendous expectation to have your videos be incredibly polished. It's, you know, it's very monetized. Spaces like TikTok allow, you know, my 14-year-old niece to upload a video of her at McDonald's goofing off with her friends. And that's exactly what TikTok is meant for, right? So to understand why they were so upset when there was the ban is that was the one space where, you know, teenagers especially, for better or worse, could post snippets of their daily life without feeling this pressure to be amazing and awesome and you know, this strive for perfection.
We don't need to go too far down the mental health angle again. But as I mentioned earlier, my daughter was so distraught at the notion that TikTok might not be there. I did have to think, like, it's so intense. Maybe that's a bad thing if this is so important in their life. How do you, from where you sit as a viewer of all this stuff, am I taking this overly seriously?
And that's a complicated question, right? It's so easy to say social media are responsible for, and then insert whatever mental health issues plague whatever generation. But mental health issues are complicated to begin with. And to point at one thing as a cause, it doesn't do justice to the complexity of this. We know we actually have conflicting results about the relationship between social media and mental well-being. Like, we know that folks with social anxiety are more likely to use social media, but we are not in agreement on whether social media is in fact responsible for depression and loneliness, or whether folks who are lonelier are more likely to use social media. It's highly individualized, right? If you see your daughter getting upset when you take her phone away and she can't be on TikTok, then it might be time to have a conversation about what do you do on TikTok? You know, is she maybe chatting with her friends? Because then it would be the equivalent of you taking a phone away from me, you know, back in the 90s. I would have also been very upset to not be able to call my friends. Or is she using it to scroll through reels and just distract herself? So ultimately, when we look at social media and mental health, we need to also look at what are we using social media for? What might we be facing in our daily lives? Like, are we being bullied at school and are we using this as a distraction? Right? And what role does social media play in that? So it's really not that straightforward. And more than anything, it's important, even for adults like myself, to think, why am I now watching reels? I'm on like minute 20. What am I avoiding? Why am I doing this? So to have this meta awareness of why we use social media is far more important than just blaming social media for whatever ails society.
Yeah, on this issue of blaming social media, there has been talk recently of pointing the finger at social media for causing the sort of the craziness in the political, our views of politics. There's this other school of thought that said, look, this is part of the American fabric. All, and it has been throughout history, all that happened is that social media focused it and made it much more public, and we're seeing it for the first time. It's a conversation for another show, but I thought I would run it by if you've heard this kind of debate,
yes.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there was an entire very successful Broadway musical written about the feud between two of her founding fathers who wrote the most nasty things about each other in the newspaper, right? Hamilton and Jefferson. I mean, the length of our messages might have shortened, like we're restricted to, 280 characters or something? But what social media do is they amplify what goes on in society, and they draw a magnifying glass to things that might have otherwise not gone as noticed. Now, am I saying that social media isn't also fanning the flames? maybe, but it's going to take, you know, some time for us to be able to look back and say, yes, this was really attributable to social media. And right now we can only guess that it might play a role in it.
Yeah. Devin?
Yeah. And I think you have to look at, a little bit at the incentive structures here, right? What are the incentive structures that are in place? What are the motivations of the social media companies? How do they make a dollar? And is it aligned with user expectations or not? Is it aligned with users' needs, users' mental health, whatever it may be? And, you know, given that there's just kind of a few mega corporations, a few monopolists here who have little incentive to really innovate, I see that as kind of the source of, you know, of a lot of the discontent here and a lot of the issues. And I don't think the answer is find one perfect social media company to build the perfect social media experience that is great for everyone's mental health and everything. You want more people building and you want more people innovating. So that's kind of our approach to that.
All right. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we want to hear from you. The number is 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. The ways that people use social media are evolving constantly, and we're talking about that today. Joining me, Judith Rosenbaum with the UMaine's Department of Communication and Journalism, and Devin Ivey with the social media service Blue Sky. Share your comments, questions, email us, talk@mainepublic.org. You can post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call. The number, 1-800-399-3566. Here's a message from Susan, who this kind of sums it up for, I think, a lot of people. I want to leave Facebook mostly because I'm annoyed by Mark Zuckerberg's extreme shift to the right, but I still love seeing what my friends who have moved away are doing, who's getting married, and where they've been traveling to. So there is this, people are in inner conflict, I guess, Judith, and it's like this is like what many people are doing. Some are acting on it, but others are just sort of staying for the good parts and ignoring what they don't like.
I mean, 100%. And I actually share Susan's sentiment because I also get annoyed at the commercialization of Facebook. But most of my family lives overseas, and being on Facebook allows me to keep track of who's getting married and who's graduating. And so what social media has done is it's allowed us to maintain connections across distances. And initially, that's all it meant to do. And now, as Devin pointed out before the break, with the commercialization and increased monopolization of social media platforms, we're seeing things we don't like, but we've also kind of married ourselves to this platform. Because, like, for me, even if I wouldn't want to be on Facebook, we have a neighborhood Facebook page. And if I want to know if the trash pickup is delayed by a day, I find out through Facebook, right? If there's a raccoon loose in the neighborhood, I find out through Facebook. So it's become this part of our lives that a lot of folks are not exactly thrilled about, but also cannot do without.
Yeah, Devin?
Yeah, I'm extremely sympathetic to this. The incumbent social platforms are really hard to leave, and that's been studied and proven. A lot of people who want to leave, they try and they end up going back, and it's usually because of a personal connection to someone there. And it's usually that gravitational pull is not usually of the product, but of your social connections. This kind of has a name. It's called like network effects, and it's what is really the core driver of these monopolies is what kind of ties you to them. So on the more kind of experimental side of what we're doing at Blue Sky, we're building an open network. And the idea is if someone else builds the next Facebook, you should be able to move there and still be able to talk with your friends and family, even though you're somewhere else. This idea is called interoperability or interoperation. Mm. So there's some technical pieces to that, but that is the world that we want to live in. This is what we're kind of building towards in the long vision of Blue Sky.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones and bring in Kitsy, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Kitsy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, I am probably the only person you will ever hear from, and I'm the only person I know who has completely, as of 2 years ago for me, gotten off all aspects of the internet. I don't have a smartphone, I just have a landline, and I use postal service, and I use direct face-to-face. And part of the reason I did it is because I can get easily overwhelmed, and I could probably get addicted, and I could fall down many rabbit holes, which I don't need to do. I want to say if it were not for Maine Public, particularly Maine Public Radio throughout the day, but also the television, I would not do this. Maine Public, and I've said it repeatedly, is my major source of continuing education. And I have a doormat outside my apartment that says curiouser and curiouser. So I'm extremely in very curious. I do subscribe to the daily newspaper, and I'm sorry they're beginning to go out of print. But I would not be able to make it without Maine Public. And it just has made my life so much simpler. I know I'm missing out on a lot, and but I put pen to paper. And I also pick up my phone. And so far, I am just feeling not overwhelmed at all and leading the kind of life that I can manage without becoming just either addicted or subsumed by something that feels sort of out of my control.
Yeah, Kitsy, thank you for those plugs. But she was not a plant, by the way. But I do want to ask you, Kitsy, do you feel like you're, and do you have people in your age group? I'm not sure what that is, but who feel the same? Like they're not on social media, and they don't feel like they're missing anything.
No, I'm at the Atrium, which is independent living of the Cedars in Portland. And we have people who are over 100 in their 90s and in their 80s. Maybe there are a couple in their 70s. I'm 86. And but I don't think I would have to wait. I did this when I was 84. I don't know of anybody else here at the Atrium who doesn't have a smartphone, an iPhone, or is not connected to the internet. And I know I'm missing out on some things, but I will talk by phone even to my niece in Australia. And, you know, it hasn't cut off everything that's important to me. It's just cut out the stuff that I would be overwhelmed by and tend to be addicted to. Mm, yeah. So I have just simplified my life. I'm truly a neo-Luddite.
All right. Well, thank you for speaking for the neo-Luddites out there. Any comments before I want to take another call here? But, Devin?
Yeah, I have a quick comment. I mean, I think it just speaks to how very personal and individual these kinds of things are and how important it is to have a diverse media ecosystem, right? Like radio, independent news are all super important, and we're all part of this kind of ecosystem together, right? So,
yeah. Let's go to Marty in Hollowell. Hi, Marty. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I are parents of 12 and 15-year-old boys, and we restrict social media quite a bit, as long as we can. We know it's an uphill battle, and we still feel the pull from their friends, things they see and they ask about. I guess what I'm getting at is earlier one of your guests mentioned the sort of the chicken and the egg, which one caused the angst, did the angst cause going to social media? I can't help but wonder, does that even really matter, but for people like your guest to study it, how much worse does it have to get before does the study really matter? Does which one come first really matter? There's a lot of data out there, specifically I'm thinking of a book by Jonathan Haidt. It kind of lines up when a lot of these problems started with social media. How much more proof do you need before you see it for what it is? Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Marty. Judith?
Yeah, I mean, this is, first of all, congratulations on keeping your sons off social media as much as you can. I mean, I know how hard that is when all their peers are pushing them to get on social media. It really depends on the child, too, right? You know your children better than any scientist or researcher does, and you know what works for your child and what doesn't. And so in that respect, does it matter what studies show? Not if you're engaged with your children in a way that is, you know, productive and constructive. I mean, obviously, if we know that social media, for instance, cause body image issues, then that would raise real concerns for parents of kids who might lean that way. If we're not sure about it and your kids are fine with body image, then maybe you don't need to be worried about that. But at the end of the day, as a parent myself, I am very much in favor of active hands-on parenting, talking to your kids. What is this doing for you? Why do you need to be on TikTok? What do you do on there? Talk to me about it, right? Like the co-viewing that was so promoted in the 80s and 90s, co-viewing television shows, co-using social media and talking about it, I think, is really the best way to prevent any sort of issues that might arise with your children using social media.
Yeah, Marty, thank you. Paul writes on, X remains popular with news organizations and some folks because it quickly gets information to the public. Is Blue Sky hoping to capture this market as well? If so, how, Devin?
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for the question. Definitely. News is super important part of what we're building and connection to communities. So we've actually seen in Boston, a lot of the public orgs have, maybe all of them, and a lot of public officials have moved over to Blue Sky in order to reach Bostonians. We've seen really incredible click-through rates to news websites because we don't downrank links out to news websites. The Globe apparently gets incredible click-through rates through us. This is a core thing we're trying to speak to for sure. Yep.
And you're not sending news you think to people you think they want to hear, right? That's the other thing is, you tend to, it's like if you buy shoes, you get shoe ads all the time. And it seems like if you click on a right-leaning story or a left-leaning story, you get more of those instead of, right?
Right. Yeah. So we don't have, we don't monetize through advertisement. So we don't kind of have this dynamic you find on some other social media apps. We also promote a lot of functionality that allows users to, we joke, control your scroll. So we have a bunch of features that allow you to kind of choose the kind of content that you want to see that you're connected to. Sometimes it's not always the same moment to moment either, right? Some days I wake up and I'm in the mood to get news and politics. Other days I don't. And I just want to see dogs and cute stuff, and you should be able to kind of make those choices day to day and control what you're exposed to.
Just a few minutes left here. Let's go to Jim, who is calling from Elliott. Hi, Jim. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. I just had one quick point. Back around 2010, I came to the conclusion that social media was a net negative. And I'm not sure why, but that was my feeling. And I had a very close friend. She was an eighth grade teacher and still is an eighth grade teacher. And she was an enormous advocate, even conducting classes to how to make it work better and useful, et cetera, all the positives that go along with it. And just Saturday, she confessed that it is regrettable and just based on what happens in her classrooms with the phone and social media, she admitted that she is now in my camp.
I'll let either of you respond. Judith, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always great when people change their minds, right? Because if you can't change your mind, are you sure you still have one? And I also think that there are times in your life when something doesn't work for you anymore. And sometimes that includes social media. The extent to which social media can distract students from completing their work or getting enough hours of sleep is definitely concerning because we do know there's a link between social media and sleep. At the same time, as Susan pointed out earlier, social media can serve positive functions for a number of people too, people who might live far away from their family and who want to see pictures of their friends or their children or their grandchildren. Using a platform like WhatsApp or social media is the easiest way to do that. So I'm always very hesitant to condemn anything as a social media platform as entirely bad. It just doesn't work for everybody all the time, and that's okay.
Yeah, Devin, final word, about 30 seconds.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think, we have the strong sense that something does need to change in social media, that there is this broad kind of discontent going around, and it's not a new thing. It's been going around for years. And so, yeah, we think it's like not serving people the way they want it to, not in all cases, but in general. So our approach to this is to get out of the way, stop bottlenecking innovation in social media, and see what the next generation of social is going to look like.
Yeah, great. And with that, we're out of time. Thank you both so much for being here today. Devin Ivey is a senior software engineer with Blue Sky, and Judith Rosenbaum is associate professor of media studies at the University of Maine. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, an inside look at Antiques Roadshow, which is coming to Maine in June. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.